This is IA Forward, your playbook for success as an independent insurance agent. Here to help you knock it out of the ballpark are your hosts, Shane Tatum and Tanya Lead.
Shane, let's talk about dominance today.
All right, I'm game. Oklahoma started the first game of a three-game series, the championship series. So this is the top two teams in the country. And they won game one 16-1. Hit six home runs, dominated from the very beginning. It wasn't close. This is on top of just what they've done over the last 12 years, which is year after year appearances at the College World Series. And then you got four or five national titles mixed into that.
So they've only lost like three games the whole year, right?
The whole year. Texas beat them in a conference game, the third game of conference series at Texas. So they were on the road. They lost the Big 12 tournament championship game to Oklahoma State, one run game. And then they lost to UCLA, then turned around and beat UCLA 15-0 in five innings. So they run ruled them after they lost to them.
I always find it so interesting that when we talk about teams that have had years like this, it's always they only lost three games and they were against.
It's not like they went and dropped a game against an inferior opponent. They didn't go drop a game to a mid-major. They dropped a game to the University of Texas on the road. There's significance about when you actually lose the game, because we're talking about a team that's 58-3 on the year. So they've played, 61 games, and they've lost three games. I think there's justification for saying, and here was the score of that game, or here was the environment that they were playing in. The reality of it is you got to throw UCLA in there, because over the last 10 years, UCLA is probably the second most dominant program in college softball.
This always reminds me of the game where LSU went on to win the national football championship that year, but somehow lost to Kentucky. Lost to Florida and lost to Kentucky. And every year when I go to the Kentucky Derby, it's so funny because when somebody finds out I'm from Louisiana, they bring up a game that got played in 2006 because Kentucky beat LSU that year when they won the national title.
Because it's so rare. I mean, to Kentucky, it's everything. To LSU, it's like, yeah, we had a crappy game. I understand this as having married into the Aggie cult, and I understand this because I pay a lot of attention to Texas A&M football. And so there's this, yeah, we went 8-4, but our losses were to Alabama on the road, Auburn on the road, so and so. It's never we went 8-4. It's always, yeah, but our losses were to these people. And it was, oh, by the way, on the road. When you're Kentucky and you actually beat LSU, that's like two decades worth of misery coming out in one game. I understand this.
So what does this have to do with insurance?
You know, insurance has dominant players too. And there are situations all around the country, all around the marketplace, where most areas, most economic development areas or regional areas, communities, they have some dominant independent agency.
I think rural areas even have that.
They do. And there's usually some independent agency that is looked at, and it's usually multi-generational, probably in its third generation or beyond, and they are very successful, and they are dominating a marketplace because of the number of years that they've been doing that. And this is a long-term business and sort of an infinite game type business. And I think we look at that, and sometimes it can be discouraging. So if you're in the Big 12 playing softball right now, which I'm very familiar with, my daughter's about to go to the University of Kansas to play softball. And guess what? She gets to play against the national champion and the national runner-up next year from the previous year because they're both in the Big 12, Texas and Oklahoma. And so it's kind of like, okay, is that exciting or is that discouraging? Which way are we going to go here? When you look at it, it's what lens are you going to look through? And so when I think about this dominant independent agency in the rural areas or in smaller communities, and I look at that and I am talking to an agency, maybe a producer or a captive agency, there is this either, well, I can't do this because of so-and-so agency, or I want to do this because of so-and-so's agency. The picture there gets split a little bit.
You know, it's interesting. The third year that I was a competitive ballroom dancer, I did not win a single competition the entire year. First year, I had great success. Second year, I had great success. The third year, I just got my rear end kicked week after week, month after month. And to the point that when I got to the national championships and it was down to two, and the same girl that had been dominant the entire year, the same couple that had been dominant the entire year. And when it was down to two of us, they sat in second place and I headed toward the podium because there was no way that we were going to beat them because they had been dominant the entire year. And my partner and I had actually had the conversation and said this going into nationals, look, we know it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen, but we're going to finish the year. And then we're going to start working toward next year and just go into it knowing that it's probably not going to happen, but we're focused on the future, right? We're focused on the 3 months of training that we have before you go back in competition. Didn't turn out the way we expected. We did actually win the national championships that year because I figure, hey, if you're going to win one competition in a year, it should be nationals. But it was really weird to go from being that dominant player for 2 years to being the non-dominant one that's kind of trying to scratch their way through to make it on top at the end.
What'd you do different? What made you go from dominance to the non-dominance?
I moved up too fast within an organization. And so I didn't have time to develop the fundamentals that it took to be successful at a higher level. To quote one of my coaches, I was all icing and no cake. And people usually have 5 to 6 years to build up to getting to those intermediate and advanced levels. And when I did it in a year and a half, I didn't have that time to develop the skills that I needed to play at a higher level.
Kind of looking at this a little bit in reverse, one of the things that from our view, from an insurance agency standpoint, is we were always in our early days, that smaller organization that was looking at that dominant, successful organization. And we attempted to compete with them. We played their game. So if we're David and they're Goliath, we tried to go toe-to-toe with Goliath. And we got beat a lot. We constantly got beat. When we changed our game, when we decided, you know what, we're going to go at this differently. We're not going to go toe-to-toe with them. We're going to go at this from a different angle. We're going to take a different approach to our marketing. We're going to take a different approach to maybe even the type of business that we write, which I think is what sent us down this personal lines route initially, because they were really dominant in the commercial side and on a lot of commercial lines types of business. We decided we could not go toe-to-toe with them in commercial lines, and we shifted our focus into a personal line strategy. And then it started working. And that's how we learned to play a game against a dominant player when we were the little guy looking up. So then when you get to that situation where you think, there's no way I'm winning this. So did you play the toe-to-toe game? Did you do it differently? What happened there?
No, actually, we just kind of said, okay, we're going to be powerful in a different way. We're not going to play their game. We're going to play our game. We're going to embrace our strengths. And instead of playing defense on the floor, because floor craft is part of this, and I try to think inherently that I'm a kind human being. And so I tended to play a little defense and back off and let people have their own space. And that particular comp, we said, okay, we're not going to do it. We're not going to back down. And when I didn't back down and when my partner didn't back down, then it made all the difference.
I think it's very similar when you're looking at a situation like this, when you're trying to decide, is it time for me to jump from being a producer to an agency owner? I think a lot of times producers look at that agency across town or that organization that they admire, or maybe they're working in that organization for that matter. And they look at that and they're like, I can't do this. I can't compete with them. I can't go do this. And I think that it actually is something that can't hold you back. I think that's really important. Don't let that dominating organization hold you back from being successful. That's a really important thing that I've looked at through the years and went, you know, just because they're successful, I don't want them to not be successful. That it was never this jealousy thing or this thing where I'm like, you know, I just want to beat them.
That, you want to take their market share.
That is not what drove me. What drove me was I want to be successful too. I want to build an organization. I want to grow our business and grow my business. And I just started thinking, okay, how am I going to do this? What is the angle here? What is the opportunity here? And we started looking around in our area at that time and said, you know, the captive channel, the Allstates and the Farmers and the State Farms, they're all pretty fragmented. They were pretty fragmented within our marketplace. And we saw an opportunity to say, hey, maybe it's not commercial lines for us. Maybe it's personal lines for us. And everybody in our association, all the independent agency trade journals were talking about go commercial, go commercial. And we went personalized. And when we did that and we figured out how to do that, we actually became extremely successful by playing the game differently against that dominant player in our market.
I think there's a great book that you and I have both read, which is David and Goliath, Malcolm Gladwell.
Yep.
You even talked about that at our annual conference. It was pretty impactful for you when you read it.
It was. I did. I had a session on it. And I think that's something we need to do as a channel, and something that we talk about, I think about a lot, is State Farm. From a personal line standpoint, State Farm's the giant. State Farm has incredible market share, 19,000 agents across the country, just incredible dominance over the last 40, 50 years in personal line space. I think about that and I'm like, okay, how are we going to do this? Can we compete as an independent agency channel with State Farm's ability to brand? No.
No, because we're not going to spend billions with a B.
We're not, because we can't put Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers in the same commercial. I mean, come on. How much? I don't know what that costs. And then throw them in there with Jake and say, you know, no way we can compete at that level spending that kind of dollar to create a brand. So we have to think about this differently. We have to go a different route. And I think from a personal line standpoint, maybe not a commercial line standpoint, it flip-flops, right? In commercial, the independent agency channel is Goliath. In personal lines, we're David. And so I really think as a channel, we need to embrace that David approach and go at things a little differently.
When we talk about doing things differently, we are talking about networking. We're talking about community involvement. We're talking about doing all of the old school little things that people aren't doing anymore that you can do. And you don't have to have that same kind of advertising, traditional advertising spend.
Last time I talked to a State Farm agent, the agent told me that 90% of their new business came from what they called transfers, which were basically people moving into the area that already had State Farm that were moving, basically our version of agent of record. They were doing transfers from either out of state moving into Texas, or they were moving into the area. And when he said 90% of new business was coming via transfer, he doesn't market anything. He doesn't do anything from a marketing standpoint. He is 100% relying on the State Farm brand to drive his success.
That scares me.
It is so scary. I mean, that can be taken away as quickly. One bad news cycle, one something can really create a problem for agents. And so I think that's something we have to think about from an independent agency standpoint. No, we don't have that big brand behind us that's driving that, but I'm not sure we want that. I'm not sure that's what can actually win this sort of guerrilla warfare kind of mechanism that we can play here. We can do things that may be subtle at first, but before you know it, it's everywhere.
We kind of did that guerrilla warfare thing recently with ink pens.
We did. I had this long-standing idea. I always wanted to try it. I wanted to take pins to all the local restaurants. I wanted to flood the wait staff with pins.
Good pins that had the stylus on the end so they would be able to use them to put their electronic orders.
We thought about the wait staff. We decided, you know what, let's get a good pin. Let's make it waiter friendly. And our community relations rep went around and basically created these little pails full of pins and took them all to all the restaurants, and we just flooded the market.
We put a little sticker on the bottom that said, when you're out of pins.
When you're out of pins, call Melissa, and she gets a phone call from several of the restaurants. What I didn't know was how quickly we were going to run out of pins. So we had to replenish. Got a little expensive at first, and it wasn't expensive, really. Truly, in the big scheme of things, it was not expensive, but I guess I had my brain of, we're going to buy these pins. We bought like 2,000 pins. We flooded the market. And like a week later, Melissa starts getting calls. Now, that was the part that freaked me out. Like, I'm out of pins. But it was guerrilla warfare. Pins started showing up everywhere. And we even had a little bit of information of another agent that I heard about that actually took our pins from one of the restaurants and like tried to take his pins into the restaurant. All of a sudden, it just dominated the area quickly and easily. And now we're the pin company. Now we're the insurance agency, but we're the pin people. And that has flooded our local restaurant market. It's working really well. I've seen people post social media pictures with the pin. It's very interesting. It wasn't a $100,000 ad campaign. We spent a few thousand dollars and a few hours going out and doing this in the marketplace. And we haven't necessarily tagged that to the increase in business or anything like that. But what it has done, it has created a brand awareness in our community for our agency. And that's from sort of this David approach. The big, large agencies, traditionally multi-generation agencies in our area, are very well-branded, well-known, and very radio, TV, outdoor advertising based. And here we come with our little pin idea. And I would say at this point, it was a success.
And I'm going to disagree with you when you said you don't think that you can pinpoint that we had an influx of business. I really think we did, especially from a commercial side. I think that we can look at from when we started that until now, and we can see an influx.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really about that. It was really more about flooding the community with the brand. And then we've gotten some great residual off of it. And I think that's what people don't understand when they try to create a marketing plan or I've heard so many people say, well, I don't have any return on investment on social media. That's because social media is designed to be social. It's not designed to sell. You're not going to sell X number of policies because all of a sudden you have a social media plan. However, you're going to create a brand that when it comes time for someone to buy a policy, they're going to know your brand. They're going to know what your brand stands for, and you're going to be top of mind.
I blame this whole idea of what's my ROI? How do I know that this dollar I'm investing is going to generate this business? It's because your previous industry went around and told me that, right? You
right.
told me, right? Am I right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
You placed this ad and I'm going to give you this many dollars of revenue back. And so now we're in this social media environment. We're in this brand awareness building environment. And we don't know how to put that same dollar investment, dollar return type thing into place because it doesn't exist. It's not the same thing. You're not going to get that. I agree with you. We've seen a lot of activity all of a sudden. That obviously is coming from something. We've done a ton of community involvement, and it's really only been about 8 months. And we started the PIN campaign, and we've gotten some awareness in the marketplace about that. I don't know how to say we spent a dollar here and we got $3 back. That just isn't going to be the way things are done in my mind right now. I've had to let that go. I've had to stop trying to figure out how to track that and just go, hey, we're going to do this.
When I come into Texas to visit y'all, everywhere I go, it makes me happy because I see our brand, like everywhere. So I think we've just probably made some promotional item person very happy.
We did. And that's okay because he's a small business owner too. Our guy is doing a great job and he does a great job and has a great business. And that's the other beauty of this type of thing is we're spurring our local economic development.
A lot of people will go online to save 5 cents or 6 cents a piece for things like that. But we chose to go with a more expensive price to keep our money here locally.
We did. And it was just something that made sense. You know, we're going to do things in the local market. We need to invest our dollars here.
I'm thinking of starting a new agency. There's no way I can compete with the Goliath in my market.
Totally disagree. One of the exciting things about being new is that you don't have the service load or the book of business to drag along with you. One of the things that was really difficult in my early days, we already had a book of business. The agency was here. It was not successful. It was not strong, but it was here. Every time we thought about how to grow it, we always had to think about how does this affect my existing customers? What does this do to the book of business that we already have? Or we can't go do that thing. We can't go do that new and exciting thing because we have to remember these other things that we've got to drag along with us. If I'm a new agency, if I'm starting in the marketplace, I don't have that. So I can be extremely agile. I can be extremely creative. I don't have to worry about what the fourth generation agency is doing. I don't have to worry about that. I can go be something different. I don't have to go by State Farm's branding requirements. I can do something different. I can have a pin guerrilla war. I can do things on social media. I can do things at a place where I may be much more involved. And I don't have to go by all those rules. I think that's the first thing that I would say about that new agency starting out. Be excited. Embrace the fact that you do not have to do the things that they're going to have to do.
What are those things that I can do as a brand new agency to fight Goliath?
Well, I think number one is, who are you? Figure out who you are. Figure out what you want to do. And that's where you start. You're the brand. State Farm's not the brand. That big agency across town is just a building with some people in it. You have an opportunity to set yourself apart based on just who you are. And I don't think that we take that into consideration enough. We pay too much attention to that generic or business brand building and not enough thought around that individual brand building, especially in personal lines. If you go in and you drill down into those local communities and you take the big captive brand away, and all that is left are the agents in those offices. Those individuals are still capable of retaining a lot of that business because of who they are, not because of that big brand. We can do what they do better because we're choice, because we have more than one option.
And I think the independent channel fits the concept of the entrepreneurial spirit so much better, because you're being able to build something for yourself the way you want to build it. You're being able to brand the way you want to brand. You're being able to create your business the way you want to build a business and create a life that you want to create for yourself and your family. I mean, why would anybody spend tens of thousands of hours building a business based on someone else's brand? Because it's easy?
Well, that's what's been sold to us over the last several decades. That's the franchise concept has been sold to us. The turnkey model. Better success. Better chance of success.
I don't want to be McDonald's.
I understand that. But that's what has been sold to us. We're trying to break out of that. I see this sort of millennial, Gen Z kind of mindset where they're going, yeah, it's not what I want. It's not what I want to do. That's not how I see the marketplace. There's this opportunity here to kind of be anti-franchise, to kind of be anti-big brand and go at it. Basically, this ability to do things uniquely you, but still as a channel, the choice system, have this growth, this incredible growth.
You know, I think looking at the incredible growth of microbreweries and how the major brewers are losing market share to all of these local microbreweries, and how microbreweries are popping up everywhere, like especially in South Texas. When we were in Austin 2 years ago, it was amazing to me. Like, they had these microbreweries with playgrounds where people would come and they bring their children for the day. But when you look at that industry, I think that that is so similar. I think it's a great analogy to what is going to be happening very soon in the insurance industry.
Think about the microbrewery. Think about these small vineyards are everywhere. Like, I'm not a wine connoisseur. I don't know that market, but it's a great business to business analogy. Why is that possible?
And here's the thing. People always root for the underdog. I mean, that's the reason we have Cinderella stories. That's the reason that people will actually embrace you as the underdog starting a new business.
People want to see that. They want to see that success story. Don't let some dominant player, don't let that type of situation discourage you. Be nimble. Be who you are. You have an opportunity to do something and get into this business, get into a fantastic business, number one. I want to encourage agents out there, producers out there, to take that leap. This is an incredible industry. I say it time and time again, and I think the choice model wins. We can't look across the aisle or look across the street and see this dominant player and worry about that. They're actually going to create the opportunity for you.
I'm going to leave us with this quote from Curtis Jackson. Hate it or love it, the underdogs come out on top.
Attitude to choice. Make a great one.
Bye, y'all.
Ready to get the ball rolling with your independent agency? Learn more at IntegraAgent.com. That's IntegraAgent.com. Thank you for joining us on IA Forward. Make sure you never miss a show by clicking the subscribe button now, or learn more at IAForward.com.